pick up the handset. If you can just pick up the handset, we'll be easier. Uh-huh. Yeah. Co-host Esther Martinez, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. We're really grateful to have so many of you listening to our program. Remember, this program is live. This is our third episode for the second season of Talking Matters Radio Show, and we bring to you HR leaders that are transforming face of HR with their work. It's such a pleasure to have all of you here live in our program month after month, the first Friday of every month, to have a discussion with HR veterans that are making a difference to this community. Before I start with our guest today, and I'm really excited to introduce him very, very briefly, let me remind you that the show is also live on Twitter. So we will be bringing to you some of the learnings on Twitter, and you have the opportunity as well to ask questions. So the hash, as a reminder, is #TalkingMatters2. Because this is the second season. So please do feel free to come on Twitter and share your questions so we can take them live on air. So today we have with us on the show Dinesh Vidappa. He is Executive Director HR for Hindustan Unilever Limited and Vice President HR for South Asia at Unilever. So for many of you, of course, Dinesh doesn't need an introduction, but he's a veteran in HR. He's been in Unilever for over 20 years, really across the board. Started in factory, played very significant roles in the learning, corporate learning, R&D, supervisory development. He's also held global positions in Maghreb, Bangladesh, Singapore, Africa, Russia. So it's such a pleasure to have Dinesh with us. So people who actually know him closely, he's a professional that they say is gentle, suave, and a great teammate. So, Dinesh, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Esther. Thank you so much. I'm absolutely delighted to be part of the show. Thank you so much for having me.
Most welcome. So, how are you feeling today?
I'm feeling good today. It's a Friday. It's a great part of the year. We just finished quarter one. I think it's a great place to be. Thank you so much.
Wonderful. So, as you know, the format of the show today is going to be, as we always do, there'll be some few questions that, as you know, we'll be sharing with Dinesh. And what we really want is some of the questions to actually come from you as early during the show, and I'll be taking them live. So let's get started with our first question, Dinesh. We're kind of very keen to understand a little bit about your early influences that really shaped who you are today as a leader, as a professional. And what are the things that you kind of reflect through those early influences that have been the ingredients of your success?
So I think, just like any other middle-class person, early life was influenced a lot by family and friends, and obviously my parents were a huge influence. I think what we've been able to achieve today is as a result of the kind of education that we've had the privilege of getting and the opportunities that were available to us. So I think they were really strong influences in our life. They set our for three of us, so I have two siblings, and they really set the base value system, as I would say, in terms of what will guide us through the rest of our life, that's really the influence that we experience. And of course, the experience of great teachers in the education institutions, the schools and colleges that we went to. And if I reflect actually, back on the last so many years of working, 20, 25 years of working, I think I can trace a pattern back to a lot of values that were taught to us when we were young, and I'm really grateful to all that I've got.
So tell me a little bit more about those values, if you can just define them for us, and probably tell us some stories that really go around each one of those values.
So I think there's some core values around integrity, which are really probably a very important part of my life, and I think it stems back to the fact that my grandfather used to be in the British customs in Africa. And he used to be really particular of the fact that not even a pencil should move from his office to his house, kind of a thing. And, you know, it is important to be honest about not the big things only, but even the really, really small things. I think that's a value that, you know, has remained with us over the years. And I think, to me, the way it manifests itself, apart from just being, you know, honest, which I think is table stakes, is how fair are we? Yeah? So we need to be honest and fair to people, even if they don't know, you know, that a discussion is happening about them. And I think that's really, really important to me. Yeah. So that's one. I think the other is really this whole thing on education and, you know, work ethic. Because I think my father is a scientist, my mom is a teacher, and in terms of the values they have grown up with and what they've instilled with us, and that's something I think we've all seen, that at the end of the day, we are all professionals. So we're working for a company or an organization. And therefore, it's what does professionalism mean? It means just you know, putting in a hard day's work and, you know, getting rewarded in terms of your experience and in terms of your growth basis that. And I think that's an important value. So I think that's something that stays with me, to put in a good day's work. And the work itself is going to be the reward. And, you know, at the end of the day, you don't worry about achieving success because your success is in the work that you do and how well you do it. Yeah, I think these would be two of the core ones that I think would come to mind.
Very good. Fantastic, Dinesh. So integrity and education, work, ethics, really. So over yeah. and, so if those are the foundation, how will you kind of identify, again, reflecting back, what have been the ingredients on top of those values that have made you successful as a leader? What have been those ingredients in the recipe, considering the values were the foundation? What else has come in that recipe to make you a successful leader?
So I think as far in terms of, you know, how these get manifested in terms of, you know, how you build yourself as a professional, I think, you know, it's what you stand for. Yeah, and I think each of us comes to work every day with a flavor of what we stand for. And I think that gets embellished and, you know, polished as we work over the years. And I think the early influences also are our first few bosses, because they're also people that represent work life and, you know, how work could be, what leadership is about and all of that. I think that's really important. And there's another thing I actually wanted to mention. I think the space of, you know, giving people space and empowerment. Again, it's something that I learned very early, because I never had a diktat at home that you've got to study this, or you've got to go and, you know, be an engineer or a doctor. And that was very, very instrumental in shaping the way I am, because I was able to make my own choices and live by those choices. So I've never held anyone else accountable for the choices that I've made. And I think as a professional and as a leader, it's important to kind of realize that, you know, we ultimately are accountable and, you know, the buck stops with us. And the earlier we kind of get used to that, the better it is. So I think being responsible for our own choices is something that I would advocate, that, you know, we should start with people as early as possible. And, you know, sometimes you might trip and fall, and it might happen, but you make your own choice and based on the best kind of information that you have. And I think that's, again, been something that's worked very well for me. So as an HR professional, that's something I value the most. I mean, I love having space to kind of do the kind of work I want to do. I love giving people the space to experiment and try and, you know, work in the way that they'd like to work. And actually be secure and comfortable that they can be themselves and not worry about, you know, trying to be somebody different. Yeah, and I think that really helps in terms of building one's own style.
So how do you, now when you look at the new generations coming on the workplace, how do you think those values or those ingredients are actually changing? Or you think they remain the same?
No, I don't think there's a fundamental change. I think what's changed in the last many years is that there's a lot more choice. Yeah, I think people have a lot more choice about everything in life. So I keep talking about this even inside the business. I mean, 10, 15 years ago, we had probably 3 television channels, and today we have over 800 television channels. Yeah, probably, you know, 10, 15 years ago, we had 2 or 3 cars on the road, and there were, you know, the Ambassador, the Fiat, and the Standard 10, or the Herald, or whatever. And today, I can't even count the number of models of cars and bikes that are there on the road. Yeah. So the fact is that if people have choice in life on all these things, again, 15 years ago, people would travel out and they'd be traveling with long shopping lists of what you could bring from Dubai or the U.S. or whatever. Today, nobody goes out shopping because you get everything in India. Yeah, I think that's the fundamental shift that's happened in our generation. Yeah, I don't think it changes the rock-solid values that you know, people have, because we are still the products, the children of our parents. Yeah, But I think you have a lot more choice and a lot more awareness. And I think that's what's changed. So people have, so if there's something that happened in one corner of the world earlier, you wouldn't get to know it in another part of the world. I mean, today with the kind of social media reach that is there and the kind of mobile phone penetration, we have almost 800 million mobile phones in India with a population of just over a billion. You know, it just means that there is nothing that's local anymore and people will get to know about things and therefore awareness levels are far higher. Yeah, it just means that it's more important to reinforce your core values because the opportunity to be on a crossroads comes much earlier now than it used to come in the past.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell me, if you were to actually look at yourself after, you know, you're saying 20, 25 years experience in corporate and really moved across different roles, not only in India but also outside in global positions, what is still something that you struggle as a leader? What is one of the things that you still, you know, struggle with, and how do you manage that?
So I think, it's not a difficult one to articulate. It's a more difficult one to pin down. I think the one I always struggle with and have struggled with over the years is really trying to create a point of view of the future. And I think our job as leaders or as HR business partners is to help our business partners and trying to understand what the future is going to look like. And as a consequence of that, what our organization and what our people and our talent needs and what the business shape should be like. And I think that's something that I often struggle with, right? Because as one of my bosses used to tell me that, somewhere around the world, the nation's future is happening today. And the challenge of a great leader is to find out where in the world today is the future being played out. And that's really the challenge for me. It's something I struggle with and, you know, have been and will continue to. Because at the end of the day, our jobs is not maintaining what's happening or, running a set of processes. It's really trying to articulate how the business is going to be 5 years from now, 10 years from now. And then preparing our organizations to be relevant and to succeed in those circumstances. So much of what I enjoy today is a privilege of the heritage of a company like Hindustan Unilever, which has had great leaders in the past. Yeah. And my job is really to secure the future of this business and to make sure that future generations of leaders can look back and say, you know what, actually we did a few right things that are helping us today. And that's really a struggle. So, I mean, how do I manage it is a tough one. I mean, one thing is just listen a hell of a lot. So I try and meet as many people as I can, yeah, and hear what they have to say about what they're experiencing either in life or at work or anything like that. Yeah, I try and stay as close to the business as possible because many times there are a lot of trends in the business that you can see and you might, you know, get a feel of this is the way things could change in the future. Yeah, so a lot of listening and a lot of looking around and reading and stuff like that.
Wonderful, Dinesh. So right now we are in conversation with Dinesh Vidappa, Executive Director, HR, Hindustan Unilever Limited and Vice President, HR, South Asia. Reminding you to send us your questions on Twitter, #TalkingMatters2. You can also email them to us at ask@peoplematters.in and we'll be taking them live on the show. On conversation with Dinesh about values, about ingredients for success, about struggles and about the point of view of the future. It's such a pleasure to have you here today with us. So tell me a little bit about, if you were to think about the point of view of the future and probably abstract yourself out of Unilever and say, okay, what do you think is the point of view of the future for the HR function? With so much controversy about, you know, what is going to happen to HR and the traditional, you know, comments about Ram Charan splitting HR, what's your point of view of the future for the HR function?
So now you're catching it cold here. Huh? This is actually a very, very difficult. So let me try and put some thoughts on it. It's something that, you know, we're still trying to shape our ourselves. And I think really a question that, we're looking at in our team is really starting with what's the future of an organization and what's the future of work? Given the way that technology is now part of everyone's lives, work as we know it is actually changing. And the organization as we know it is very different from what it used to be in the past. Yeah. I think there is a piece of work that we all need to do in terms of articulating what's that going to be like 10 years or 15 years from now. But I think if I look at the HR profession, it's moved through several phases from being, a personal administrator to being a business partner. Yeah, and I think I think the future for HR professionals is really in making this business partner piece come a bit more alive. So I think when we talk of partnership, I often go back to, a relationship between a husband and a wife, there's stuff that you do here and now, yeah, and you share chores around the house and you kind of divide up work and finances and all of that stuff. But I think what really makes for partnership in a marriage is a commonality of dreams, yeah, where you want to get to, what you want to aspire for. You want to buy a house in 10 years' time, yeah. You want to bring up the children to be these kinds of individuals. You want to give them a kind of education that maybe you never had. But I think what really binds a couple together is a commonality of dreams that they have together. And that really makes for, a great relationship. I think that's true about, the role that we as HR people play in the business as well. I think what's important for HR professionals is to move from a phase of saying, I partner you by providing the support that you need, yeah, to saying I partner you in terms of creating and making the dreams that you might have actually come true, yeah. And I think that's the space of partnership that we now need to, which is to dream with the CEO together about what the future of our business is going to be like. Who are we going to serve? Yeah? What kind of customers are we going to be looking at? Where are we going to make our returns or shareholder returns from? What parts of the economy or the country are we going to be impacting? And how are we going to play out that impact? And what kind of thought leadership can we get to our industry or to across industries? I think this space of partnership, I think, is what I would expect to come alive in the next few years. Yeah. So we've moved now to a space when we're very, very good in terms of the routine partnering here and now of resourcing, of talent moves, of job evaluations and all that stuff, learning, organizational change. I think all of these things are things we've picked up very good skills and we're doing well. But we're playing a role as a support partner. Yeah, and I think our role now is to become a futuristic partner and look at, idealizing and making true the organization's future come alive. Does that kind of make sense? Does that help?
Wonderful. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm actually, I think that's the nerve of the audience because I'm actually getting questions, follow-up questions on this. And I know it's going a little away from the original discussion, but I think it's worth it. So Sanjay Singh is asking a question, on kind of similar follow-up on that, saying that what will be the one advice that you will give to the HR community? So you're saying partnership and of course, co-creating and getting closer to business. But, tell us more about the how. Give one advice saying that, if you really need to be successful about it, this is how you should do it.
So I would say, there's one thing that you should nurture by way of your own skill and competence as an HR person, and that's something that you should strongly hold to yourself. At the end of the day, there's a skill we bring to the table, and that skill is a skill of judgment. Yeah? We fine-tune our judgment in terms of, making right talent decisions, right selection decisions, yeah, right appointments, right leadership decisions, and that's something we hone over a period of 15, 20, 30 years. Yeah, and I think the important thing is to bring that to bear in terms of business decisions. Yeah, to help people understand, okay, what's the right thing from an organizational capability point of view? Which capabilities are we strong at as an organization? And which ones, are we not going to be good at? What are we playing to? So I think the space is to look at the organization the way we used to look at individuals. Yes, look at individuals, okay, these are his strong points, these are his weak points, and, this is the skills development plan that I have for the individual. But when you're sitting around the head of top table of a business, you look at the organization as if it were an individual. And say, what is it that's really strong about our organization that's relevant today and could be for the future? And what is it that are areas that could be improved and we need to work on? What are capabilities that can be institutionalized and that can be competitive? Yeah, I think these are the kind of skills that will be needed from the HR professional of the future, and having a sense of judgment about which ones are right and which ones to put your money behind are really the things that we will, that CEOs will pay big bucks to get, people in to do, because that's what they're struggling with. And I've worked with 4 or 5 chairmen, very closely as business partners for the last many years. And I think all of them spend close to 40% of the time on people-related and organization-related issues. And what really helped them is say that, okay, how can this organization become successful in the future? How do we create a mindset that's along the way that we want it to be? And this judgment of then helping him make those decisions, you've got to move from making individual judgments about people to organizational judgments, yeah? And when I say judgments, again, I'm saying don't be judgmental. So there's a difference between, having the ability and capacity to make good judgments and being judgmental. We're not paid to be judgmental. Yeah?
Wonderful. So a follow-up, one question as well that has come from the audience is, you were saying that, one of the values that you hold is about having a great day of work when you go back and say, you know, it's really been a fulfilling day. So tell us a little more about what makes a great day for you.
That's again a very, very interesting question. I have nothing. I think at the end of the day, what I do is I, at the beginning and the end of the day, I take stock about things I'd like to move forward today. Yeah, and there's a bunch of stuff that's always operational that you need to get done. You need appointments to be made. You need some announcements to be done. You need some moves to be managed. There could be a crisis somewhere, so that's stuff that needs to get done. I think at one point there's a level of satisfaction you get by saying, okay, have I moved the organization forward beyond the here and now of today? Yeah, and I think that's a kind of balance sheet that I would do on a daily basis to understand, okay, what have I really done that's moved the organization forward? Yeah, and there may be days when you don't, and there may be days when you find yourself struggling on that, and that's fine. But I think as long as you look back at yourself and say, what am I doing that's taking the organization ahead as opposed to just managing the here and now? And I think that if I've done even one or two things for that, I feel happy. The other is, I think, a sense, again, it comes back to this fairness thing and the decisions that I've taken today and the conversations that I've had today, have I been fair to the people concerned? Yeah. Have I represented them fairly? Have I, you know, looked at them in a fair manner? Have I given them the best chance that we can give as an organization to them? Yeah? And I think that's the other thing that makes me feel satisfied at the end of the day, if I feel I've done that. Yeah? And I think the third is probably that if my team feels comfortable to raise whatever they want with me without being judged, I feel happy with that. Yeah, I feel unhappy if I go back and my team feels that, you know, I can't go to him because it'll impact his judgment of me, because it shouldn't. We're professionals, and that's what being professional means.
Wonderful, wonderful. So you have been in Unilever. There's a question as well from Gand. He's also on the Twitter stream, and I'm just seeing it as I'm listening to you at the same time. And probably it's somewhere at the back that you've been in Unilever as well for so many years, and so many great leaders you really have a culture of creating leaders in a leadership factory in a way. But the question that he is asking is, how do you handle monotony at work, or how do you handle not only for yourself but also in terms of how do you fight the perception or the feel of monotony?
Monotony, is that the question?
Yes. Yeah, monotony at work.
Okay, I think this goes back to, probably something my parents used to tell us when we were kids, that if you ever told them that you're bored, they'd say, you're not bored, you're boring. Yeah. So there's a big difference. I think the same lesson holds true. You should not find, this is the day you're finding monotony in your job. You need to figure out what can you do about your job that can make it more exciting. Because at the end of the day, I've been as satisfied with each and every one of the jobs that I've done as I'm with the one I'm doing today. Yeah, so I'm equally satisfied with the job I'm doing today as with the first job I did with HUL, which was when Hindustan Unilever Limited, when I joined 23 years ago. And I think I do believe that it's as leaders, and that's why they say leadership is a lonely job. Yeah, because you will not have anyone as a leader either making something exciting for you or telling you what to do or showing you a direction of the way forward. Yeah. So this whole space on leadership is actually saying, can I take leadership of myself to start with and say that, can I kill the monotony in my job? So there is some stuff that's operational, that's fine, you get it, you need to do it. Yeah. But you also need to make sure that you're doing exciting and interesting things for the way forward. So I think there's a part of the job that we should be happy with a certain amount of, you know, regularity. Yeah. I would want a pilot who's taking me from here to Singapore to fly to Singapore and not decide that he wants a more creative route or, you know, fly in a more creative fashion. He needs to be predictable about how he gets there, yeah? And so I think there's a part of our job that we need to reassure the organization with that, you know, come what you may, your customer experience of people in management in HR or in the company will be outstanding and world-class and in a certain kind of predictable way. But there's a piece of us that we need to bring in, which is, how do we recreate and how do we architect our jobs? Yeah, and I think that space is given to us, and that's why I love the company I'm in, because for the last 25 years they've given me the space and the privilege to shape my job the way I want to. Yeah, so the day you're finding this monotony, look at your job and say, what can I do with it, or how can I make something different happen? I think that's very important. Yeah, and I'm happy to have a conversation with anyone who wants to do that with their jobs anytime, even offline, but. I think there's a magic that you can make come alive with your job, and the magic will start when you can create magic for the job with yourself. Because if you experience magic in your job, you can create magic for other people.
Understood. Fantastic. Such an inspiring answer. Thank you so much, Dinesh. So I'm going to go back to my question, Liz, even though I have a long list that it's coming, but there's a question that I really am very eager to ask you. Do you have a not-to-do list? Like, you want to give people the freedom and so on and so forth, but sometimes I think in the operational day-to-day life, things have to get done as well. Do you have a not-to-do list that you follow, and what's in it?
It's not a very long not-to-do list, because I think at the end of the day, we also grow up as children by saying, don't do this, don't do that, and we grow up with too much of nose, yeah? But I think the one thing that I encourage my team not to do is not to have politics. Yeah, so I hate politics, and I tell you, I understand in organizations you tend to have some kind of this going on, but it's something, as I said, it's just not acceptable to me. Yeah. So if you have an issue, come in pairs or come in trials or whatever it is. If the people who are involved in the issue, please come in together. Yeah. That's one thing that, I try and follow. The other thing is, in terms of time management, I like to respect people's time and, like to respect my own time. So, I don't generally schedule too many long meetings unless it's a review session, yeah? And people can come in and meet me whenever they want. So if I'm in my office, it means that you can come and meet me whatever I'm doing. If I want to work on something undisturbed, I will work somewhere else, but not sit in my office. Because the fact that I'm in an office means you can come and meet me anywhere. So I try and not structure it too much, that people have access, to whatever resources or stuff they need to be able to do what they need to, and try not to be too structured. Try not to waste too much of time, because at the end of the day, work-life balance is important. I'd like to go back and spend time with my family, and so use every minute of the day as well as I can.
Wonderful, wonderful. So we have 5 minutes to go for the show. I'm going to try my best to cover all the questions that we've got, at least the ones that we haven't covered so far. Let me start with the one who's coming as well from our audience. Think, what's the biggest learning that you've gathered from your employees or people that work with you that has really helped you in your career? Not people who you report to, but, probably people from the ground level up. What is the biggest learning that you gather from them or from one particular person?
So I think, and there are lots of people, I think one of the things that, I think many times we look for inspiration, above or for very, very, seasoned leaders or people who have worked in very senior places. And one of the things that always amazes me and surprises me is how much people you work with can inspire you. Yeah, there could be people in all parts of the organization who can be doing some very, very simple things, but put their heart in it in such a way that they feel completely inspired. And I think that's one of the learnings that I'm always humbled with. And there's so many stories of people who kind of I can talk about and, at leisure at some point. But, people you've worked with, people who just joined the business a year or two back, or people who your secretary, somebody in your team, who could do something or show a level of commitment that's so incredible that it just makes you wonder and look at them and go on. That keeps me inspired. And I think the learning when I started my career, before I started working, you always thought you want to look at a big leader and say, that's the kind of source of inspiration, so to say. But I've realized with all the experience I've had that inspiration can be sitting next to you. And it could be in a very, 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 common form. Yeah? And I'll give you an example. This is long, many, many years ago. Huh? And it's a very simple example. But I was in this, in the days before I joined this company, I was traveling on a train, and it was an undeserved, because I got a sudden call to travel into one location, and I was traveling undeserved. And I was sleeping, and there was only a bit of few square inches of space left in the bathroom of the undeserved compartment. It was packed absolutely, and I didn't have any space, and I was sleeping there on that little bit of ground, the space that I had, and there was a really, really poor man who didn't have, who barely had clothes on his back, and he kind of put down a newspaper and said, let's share this newspaper, yeah? And I was very touched, and I said, sure, really, thank you. And then some people came and said, you have to give us money if you're going to sleep here. And I said, I'm not going to give any money, and it's against our principles, and so on. And he said, no, $10 for the space. And I said, no, I'm not getting it. And they went away, and they said, we'll come back to you. And after some, the whole night, they never came back, yeah? And in the morning, I kept talking to this guy. In the morning, this guy told me that actually they had come in the night, and he had given them 10 rupees from me and said, let him sleep in peace, yeah? And it was amazing. And obviously, I gave his money back, and I don't. But, the guy who didn't have anything with him, who was literally in tattered clothes, was willing to pay and share his newspaper with me and pay $10 so that I could sleep in the night. I mean, what's more inspiring than something like that?
Wonderful, wonderful. So this is really thrilling. We are 2 minutes to go to close the show, and I want to make sure that we ask you a question, which I think it's a question that we always close the show with. And there are some questions that we have not been able to cover, and probably I will reach out to you offline so we can get those answers, at least on Twitter, Dinesh, with your consent.
Sure.
So the question is, what is the advice you will give to your younger self? Now you're looking back and you're thinking that, you know, what is it what you would tell yourself if you could just go back to that Dinesh who joined corporate world 20, 25 years ago?
Yeah, that's a difficult question. It reminds me of a book that was written by Richard Bach. I think it was One or something like that, which is that I gave my life to be the person I am today. Was it worth it? That is a question he asked in the book. And I think it's a very profound question. And if I look back at the 25 years of working experience that I've had, I really wouldn't change anything. I mean, I think I've made some difficult choices. I've done some challenging jobs. I've faced some difficult times. My hair has probably turned a little gray. I've made some mistakes. I've stood up. I've, you know, had some great times. I've achieved some successes. I just think the advice I've given is just have faith in the decisions you take and just move on and be comfortable with them. I've never looked back at any of the decisions I've taken and said, you know, had I taken some other decision, would life have been different? I've taken a decision. In fact, I used to be working in finance before I moved into HR in my first couple of years of working. And I was actually considering to do a PhD in finance when I got an offer from HUL to work in HR. And many people asked me, would you have changed? And I said, no. I just think that, you know, having confidence that the decision you're taking is the best thing you're doing is the best thing you can give yourself. And just have comfort in that and, you know, don't think of ifs and buts. And be an optimist, of course. So that's, I mean, I'm very happy in the last 25 years. And, you know, maybe some things could have gone better, some could have gone worse. But you know what? It's my life. And I'm happy with it.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Dinesh. And we are actually already overshot our time, but it's been such a fantastic inspiration to hear. I haven't even realized that 30 minutes have actually gone by, and I'm sure that's probably true for our listeners as well. So thank you so much for being with us today and being such a fantastic guest. So thank you. Thank you so much, Dinesh.
Thanks, Anita. It's a pleasure. All the very best to everyone. Bye.
So thank you, each one of you as well, for joining us today live. As you know, the next show will be on 8th of May, again at the same time, 12 o'clock, and we'll have SB Nathan, Chief Talent Officer from Deloitte, joining us. We look forward to welcome you all to the program. We will send you the link as well. The team will make sure we send you the link to be able to keep it in your calendar. So thank you very much. And as we close our radio show, as always, we wish you a great and inspiring day ahead.